What's with the notebooks?
Poems.
Poems. What are they about? Wait, let me guess.
Love.
Not all of them.
I don't believe in love.
So no magic, no fate, no meant to be. What if I told you I could get you to fall in love with me? Just give me a day.
An hour.
Hey, everybody. Neil Rosen here joining you along with Bill Bregoli.
That's right.
And Bill McCuddy.
You can't stop it because it's my apartment.
For another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. That was a scene from a new movie that opens this week called The Sun Is Also a Star, which I saw and Bill Bregoli saw and Bill McCuddy did not see. So we're going to try to either... Well, we'll hear
Stump the Cud. What do we call this? I don't know what it's called. It doesn't matter.
Do you want to see it after
that's easier.
And we'll also talk about a new movie on Netflix called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile about Ted Bundy and his wife.
Starring Zac Efron, who's getting rave reviews for
that's right. And Bill McCuddy was going to talk about Cold Pursuit.
Yeah, that's a remake of that Stellan Skarsgård movie a couple of years ago about a snowplow driver. Streaming everywhere.
Okay, streaming everywhere. And some other goodies. I went to some network upfronts. We'll tell you what that is and my reaction to that. It's a TV industry event that happens every year.
Did you see Kimmel?
I did see Kimmel.
All right.
I did see Kimmel like last year. He's the 16th year in a row that Kimmel's done this, he said.
Look, it's like a roast. We'll explain.
I'll explain. So let's start out with talking about The Sun Is Also a Star. Bill Bregoli, would you describe what this movie is about? I'd appreciate it.
You would, wouldn't you?
I would. I really
all right,
would.
Guess what? I have notes, but unlike
you. I haven't seen it, and I know it's star-crossed lovers and a woman who's about to be deported.
I have notes.
Okay.
It stars Yara Shahidi. What show is she in?
Big name.
Blackish and Youngish.
Blackish and Youngish, that's right.
Grownish, I'm sorry. And, Blackish and Grownish.
Okay, and Charles Melton. And it's about a...
He's from Riverdale.
Okay.
The show Riverdale.
Wow, you're right up on everything this week.
No notes for Neil. I just want to paint a picture for the home audience.
What
Bill has
a
little,
I have a little
something he pulled out of a Cracker Jack box note, and Neil is working extemporaneously. Alert the media.
Well, she's a Jamaican-born young woman. She's a science nerd. She likes astronomy as opposed to astrology. And she meets up this Korean-American boy, and he says, our meeting is fate, and I'm going to convince you to fall in love with me in an hour. And she
so it's like 500 days of summer in one day.
Well, it's and there's a ticking clock because the next day her family's getting deported.
Wow. This is what happened. This is exactly what happened to Melania. And then Donald proposed and the rest is history.
That is all true. The movie opens with the family getting deported and she wants to seek the help of a lawyer who turns out being played by John Leguizamo, who I think is the best thing in the movie. And she's trying to get a stay of execution, basically get her family not being deported. And while all this is going on, because she has 24 hours for the whole family to leave, she meets this guy and there's this whirlwind romance that's going on. And
travelogue through the streets of New York. Somehow they end up in Roosevelt Island and then still make it back to Midtown in time to meet the lawyer.
Yes, New York never.
So in my decision making,
better than isn't it romantic?
Let me just ask a couple of quick question. Like, does it paint? Is it a Valentine to New York or is it realistic about?
It is a Valentine to New York.
Because it feels like a gritty story the way you're describing it. And I'd like to see some.
Thing.
I'd like to see some shitty New York if this is an immigrant.
It's a really the fact that the family's being deported is very timely in terms of what's going on in the news these days with immigrants. Even Leguizamo goes in the current political climate. I wish I could do more, but I'm going to give it a shot. But they didn't do enough with that premise. It's based on a YA novel and a young adult novel. And the focus, that's really becomes a minor subplot compared to this romance where he's trying to convince her that she doesn't believe in love and he believes that give me a day and I could teach you to fall in love with me. And I did not buy
I say that to my wife every day and it's been 22
I did not,
years.
I don't know about you. I didn't buy any of this.
I didn't either, to be honest with you.
I didn't think the leads had any chemistry whatsoever.
That's funny because that's not the buzz. The buzz is that they are great, but the movie is just okay.
Well, I don't think they have any chemistry. I don't think that the dialogue is just really dopey. The kid from Riverdale who plays the male lead, he is...
Don't make Bill look at his note again.
No, he's like so doe-eyed and, he sees her, first of all, he spots her... In Grand Central Station from up above. He's looking down at people in Grand Central Station and instantly falls in love as thousands of people are mulling around Grand Central Station. He just spots this one girl and starts running after her. And he goes, I'm in love with her.
He spots her because she's wearing a jacket on the back. It says
Latin phrase.
Deus ex machina.
Yes.
It means God is in the machine.
Yeah. I thought it
meant, I went to school that day.
I thought it meant I liked the movie Ex Machina with Oscar Isaac and... Who is the woman in that?
We'll edit these jokes out, folks.
Who is the woman, by the way, in Ex Machina?
Alicia Vandekar.
Alicia Vandekar.
Well, anyway. Yeah, so I didn't like the movie. They didn't do enough with that deportation premise. It's a dopey love story. Dialogue's insipid. The audience I was with was laughing unintentionally towards the end of the movie in the all-media screening that I went to. And at the ridiculous dialogue, and I just... There's a whole little plot with him and his brother not getting along, which I thought was dopey, and...
By the end of the day, I'll bet they do.
So what about you? Gee, you think?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I was actually glad that they didn't do more with, and get all political with the deportation plot. It's just the background. It's really the
scenery.
That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I was fine with that.
All right, well, here, I'm waiting to wait, and what's important about this is that I was supposed to watch this for our PBS show, sitting around talking,
actually,
it's just called Talking
Pictures.
Movies with Neil Rosen.
You know you should do? You
talking
should
Pictures.
See it and bring Lily.
Yes, Lily would like it. I told you
that. Because
she is
the intended audience.
But no, I'm going to stay true to this game. I'm not going to see it, and we'll do the show with me having not seen it.
You
successfully talked me out of it. I was going to go this weekend. I was going to actually plunk down money, but now I won't. Now I'll go see.
You have to see.
Now I'll go see John Wick, which none of us have seen, and is getting our buddy Chris Nashawadi at Entertainment Weekly says this is that rare sequel that's better than the first two.
Mm. Chris Nashawadi, who is doing our show that we're taping next week, also insists that you must see
right
that.
So John Wick, is everybody going to see that?
I don't know.
Are you wicked out?
I don't know. Am I wicked out?
I'm working this weekend. I got things to do.
I might. I'll probably catch up with it, but not this weekend, not opening weekend. But
Buzz is great, and the tomato meter says that audiences are like at 100 for this thing. So audiences apparently want to see it one more time. And Halle Berry is in this one and supposedly kicks a lot of ass and supposed to be great.
So recently we did a movie about Charles Manson called Charlie Says, and now we're going to talk about a movie that's on Netflix about serial killer Ted Bundy in our thematic look at serial killer movies called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. And it stars Zac Efron as Ted Bundy. But the movie is really more about, less about the serial killings, which you never see in the movie, and more about his wife, who he's this super nice guy who's cooking breakfast for her. And gee, do you like the waffles? You know, got up early special to make them for you. And it's fresh. I put fresh blueberries on them, you know. And there is no indication whatsoever in his behavior towards his wife that he's a serial killer. And again, I'm just repeating myself that you do not see any of the grisly murders in the movie. He'll do a murder. You don't see it. He'll come home and he's like, gee, I thought we'd watch something fun tonight on television.
Does he at least wash his hands when he comes home?
No, he's like Ward Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver to age myself.
Too much so? Like over the top?
No, it's real good. I mean, he's just like, he's not a, like where Manson.
So it's Hitchcockian in a way. Like
Manson,
it's all off camera.
Well, where Manson was a lunatic. You'd look at him, he looked like a lunatic. And he acted like a lunatic. This guy is very smart. He has a law degree, or he went to law school. I don't know whether he actually completed it, but he's a real smart guy who happens to be a serial killer, and he's very charismatic. And you see his interaction not only with his wife, but with this other woman, again, that he has no interest in murdering, that he has sort of a just nice guy, normal relationship with. So it's interesting. I think they could have balanced it a little more by just showing you the dark side of this guy, which they don't really show you. They just show you this guy not doing anything and just claiming his innocence in court. He fires his lawyer. He defends himself, which he does very well, by the way, because he's even the judge, played by John Malkovich, goes, you know, it's too bad. I would have enjoyed having you as a lawyer in my court, but you decided to go another direction. You know, so I mean, other than not showing you the dark side of this guy, it's sort of an interesting film. I mean,
but maybe it sounds like makes... that. It sounds like that is the dark side, and you kind of missed it. His mundane normal existence is what's horrific because this is the kind of guy.
He's escaping from prison. That's kind of like James Earl Ray was like. Didn't he escape the guy who killed Martin Luther King? Didn't he escape from prison?
James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King.
I don't remember.
The Russians attacked Pearl Harbor. He's on a roll.
I mean, he keeps ingeniously escaping from prison, and they are.
When they don't show that?
No, they show you that.
Okay.
No, it's kind of good. I'm a little confused. I like it. I recommend it. So,
okay.
Well, you have to watch
and
the show. But
and
I mean,
it's not a miniseries. It's a standalone one and done.
Standalone 100-minute movie.
And Zac Efron is not just.
Zac Efron is very good.
Not a comedic actor, but he's a great dramatic actor now.
No, it's just he's very good. He's very good.
If this had had a theatrical release, would Zac Efron been Independent Spirit Award nominee
but he's good. But no, I wouldn't go that far. You know, interested?
Yeah, I have no problem. I made money on serial killers, so I guess I should
explain.
Oh, years ago when I did a thing for National Lampoon, I did a NAD parody called the Serial Killer Bowl Collection, where I put serial killer faces in cereal bowls.
Funny
it
stuff.
Changed my life.
Funny stuff.
And who was on those bowls?
Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, and we had
Captain Kangaroo, Tony
John,
the Tiger.
Berkowitz.
David Berkowitz.
Yeah, Berkowitz. There you go.
There you go. I like National
Lampoon. I sent a thing to Mad Magazine when I was a kid, a Great Moments in Advertising, called Kellogg's Puts More in Your Morning, and it was MOURNI, and it was a little boy eating cornflakes at a funeral right in front of a casket.
Did you get that published
in Mad Magazine? Yes, I did. Oh. Yes, I have it framed around here somewhere. Wow. All right, so a couple of years ago, there was a movie called In Order of Disappearance, and it starred Stellan Skarsgård about a plow driver whose son turns up dead of a heroin overdose.
This. We did this on the old TV.
Yeah, it's a good movie, and it's about, I'm going to say 4 years ago. So, yeah, of course, Hollywood, as they're wont to do, comes along and decides, under director Catherine Hardwicke, to move it to Colorado. From Norway, I guess it was, or Sweden, and still have a plow driver, and it's Liam Neeson, and his son has an overdose, and he's got to extract a certain kind of revenge over
this
drug dealer.
But this came out a while ago, the Liam Neeson one, didn't it?
It was earlier this year.
Yeah.
So, but
that was the one right before he got into the trouble, right?
It's just coming out on streaming. Yeah, the story that came out was he made a racist comment about in his youth. That week. So this is now streaming. I missed it in theaters. We didn't review it for the show. And I have to tell you, it's kind of like Pulp Fiction meets Fargo. It's much, much, much darker than the original. And in some ways, I think it's better. It's also really good in terms of Liam Neeson is going to obviously keep making these My Kids Are Missing, My Kids Are Dead, My Kids Are Porn Stars, My Kids Are Whatever. And he's going to go kill a bunch of people, but this one's funny. It's darkly funny, and I remember him doing all the talk shows and even a couple of interviews and saying, "This is not my normal Taken kind of thing. It's the same formula, yes, and I have a certain set of skills, yes, but it's Fargo funny." So it's like
the Stellan Sarsgaard one was humorless. There was no, wasn't funny
at
all.
Right, it was bleak as the scenery. This is much. It's dark comedy, but it's very, very funny, and I found it to be a surprise. So streaming on all platforms starting a couple of days ago, I recommend Cold Pursuit.
I you've convinced me. I'll see that. What about
sure.
you, Bill? Yeah, there you go.
Boom, I always win this game.
So I have a buddy at ABC who took me last year. We talked about it on the podcast and took me this year to the ABC Upfronts. Now, it was Upfront Week this past week in New York, and I'll explain to you what that is. Every year, I'm going to be talking for a while about the Upfront. So would you explain what Upfront Week is, Bill?
So it's for Darren Stevens and
Darren Stevens.
And
Darren Stevens from Bewitched.
And,
remember? He's an advertising
guy. And John
guy.
Hamm. What was John Hamm's name?
His name was...
In Mad Men.
Yeah, I know.
It's how quickly we forget. The Mad Men of...
Don Draper.
It's for the Don Drapers of the world. They attend these, in some cases, Carnegie Hall, in some cases, Lincoln Center. New York City basically is taken over by the three major
NBC
networks.
NBC is Radio City, ABC is Lincoln Center, and CBS is Carnegie Hall.
Well, Carnegie Hall used to be NBC. because that's where Johnny Carson announced that he was leaving. So they flipped it around a little.
Yeah, they
flipped
it around.
Well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Radio City's
the town is kind of taken over by across the street. I live across the street from Carnegie Hall, and yesterday there was a Marvelous Mrs. Maisel corned beef sandwich food truck that was giving out 60s food. The point is, the advertising agencies all sit in these big theaters and watch a couple of minutes of
Two and a half hours.
They watch, but they get basically teasers. They watch, right? They get teases of all the all the new programming, and
90% of which, by the way, will be canceled a year from now. And Kimmel, which I talked about that. Remember last year when we talked about it, and he started naming all the shows that they were hyping the shit out of.
The important thing from the business side is that the ad agencies then come out and bid on the shows they want, and that helps the networks. It's a really archaic system, but it helps the network establish how much they're going to charge for each show. So it's a dog and pony show. People fly in from all over, the O&Os, the affiliates, everybody comes in, they're wine, they're dined. The celebrities go to all the parties. Everybody's nice to everybody. You can own a station in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and you get a picture with John Hamm or with Kristen Wiig or whoever.
Under
that auspices, right. And it's a tough ticket to get into, Neil Schnorr Rosen every year.
I got a buddy at ABC.
He's got a buddy. He's got a guy.
I got a guy at ABC who invites me.
Become very famous for Kimmel.
I don't go to the NBC one or the CBS one. I don't have any connections to get into those. But the reason I asked my friend to take me to ABC is solely because I really love Jimmy Kimmel. And he does this scathing 15-minute monologue where after you're watching a two-hour presentation of them touting, here's a five-minute look at our brand new sitcom. And they'll show you some sitcom, which will probably get canceled in a couple of months anyway. And they make it seem like it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, he comes out, Kimmel, after you're watching, 30 of these shows that they're promoting and just rips.
How many years has he been doing this?
He said at the beginning of the monologue, 16 years.
So,
and it's like
let's just talk about the bravery of that for a second, because 16 years ago when he was just named or was just on ABC, like he said, okay, I'll do it. But in the same way that Ricky Gervais said, I'll do the Golden Globes the first year. You got to let me do whatever I want to do. And they did it. And I remember the first year, it was kind of 50-50. Everybody said, ooh. But
he's great.
Yeah, well, it's funny.
You were on, and I remember you called me, you were on the set in L.A. of Jimmy Kimmel Live on Hollywood Boulevard. And you told me, I said, what's it? You said to me, it's very small. It's very, very
it's a
small.
A tiny studio.
And I've been on the set of The Tonight Show, where they do in 6B in Rock at 30 Rock, and that's very small,
right.
You know? But the Colbert one is not. I mean, that's in the Ed Sullivan Theater.
And the old Carson in Burbank was gigantic.
Yeah, I've been in that. I've seen The Tonight Show there a couple of times.
But this digression is brought to you by LaCroix.
So it's like, you got to sit through 2 hours of bullshit. First of all, it's not only the ABC shows. ABC owns everything. They start out by telling you that they bought Hulu. They bought Comcast's part of Hulu. So now they own Hulu. And before you even get to the ABC shows, they show you the ESPN shows. Then they show you and what they're doing in sports. Then they show you they own National Geographic Television. They start showing you. There's all these networks that they own that they're showing you, their product. So finally, after an hour, they finally get to ABC. And then they're just... And they bring out the entire cast, except for Manny, for some reason, of Modern Family, because it's going into its last season. And they
including Celia Weston, who you told me last week wasn't on the show.
Who?
Never mind. Keep going.
They all come out, and that was kind of cool. And
you said you saw the This Is Us chick that weighs like 1,000 pounds too, right?
Well, I didn't go to their upfront. Another friend of mine invited me to the NBC after party, which took place at a restaurant that used to be called the Four Seasons, and now it's called...
It's two restaurants now. It's called The Grill and The Pool.
Right. And Chrissy Metz from This Is Us was there. So was Lorne Michaels, who was kind of sequestered in a little booth with his little entourage.
I'm just in a corner by myself.
You couldn't really get near him. But there were some SNL people walking around.
I'm making light of the fact that she is obese, but I am going to say it with this asterisk. My wife
She's
and I
very
both
sweet.
Watched
I was
this show.
To her. She was
She's
very
extremely
sweet.
Sweet. She was just in a movie we talked about a couple weeks ago where the kid falls through the ice and she prays and he comes back to life that made some money in Christian audiences. But she is unhealthy. I'm just going to, yeah, that's the point.
That's funny that you
said I'm not going to make a fat joke. I'm no, just going to you know, say it's funny that she say looks that unhealthy to
my
me.
My wife and daughter love This Is Us. It's like, and I told her this. I said, you know.
You said she's unhealthy?
No, I said that, you know, my wife and daughter love this show so much, and it's true that on Thursday nights, if I walk in the house and it's 9 o'clock, they both tell me to just be quiet, don't talk, go in the other room. They're really addicted to this program. And she was smiling. She's really, really nice. But I said to my wife when I got home, I said, I saw Chrissy Metz, and I'm telling you exactly what you said, Bill McCuddy. I said, I don't think she's going to be around much longer if she just...
Could she get on my 600-pound life? Or do you think she's about 380, 400?
No, I don't think she's 600 pounds, but she really should lose some weight. It does not look good.
All right, so Kimmel.
So this whole thing about you being on the set, and I saw them do the show in Brooklyn, it's like watching the Jimmy Kimmel show.
Wait, their upfront was in Brooklyn?
No, I'm saying...
Oh, you saw them do the show here in Brooklyn.
Once a year to Brooklyn.
Because you were at the Lincoln Center, right?
Lincoln Center, and the backdrop is the same backdrop that he has on his Jimmy Kimmel Live talk show. And he comes out, and it's like watching the Jimmy Kimmel show. And he does a 15-minute monologue, which is scathing, and he's just roasting the shit out of, like, every show that you've just seen hyped up, which is very, very funny. I mean, he's also knocking. He goes, "What did he say? This is a good joke. I won't deliver it well because I'm not the great stand-up."
Oh, our audience is used to that.
But he said, "He goes, what is this?" He goes, "Obama is now making television shows, and Trump is the president. What kind of fucked up Freaky Friday world is this?" You know,
that's cute.
And but most of the jokes are directed at the last 2 hours that you had to suffer through watching clips from these shows that didn't really look any good. And he said, "Yeah, that Whiskey Cavalier that we showed you last year. Well, that was, you know, and I don't know what the, I don't remember what the jokes were, but everybody was laughing right. hysterically. And it's way too long. The whole thing was 2.5 hours. But once Jimmy Kimmel comes out, that's great. And then, again, like being at the Jimmy Kimmel show, he goes, we have some music, and John Mayer comes out with a full band, and John Mayer plays a concert.
Wow.
So they really do
what
wine.
What must that cost? Like $250,000 just
really
for John Mayer,
they really wine
right?
and dine these advertisers. I mean, you talk
Was that people. Alice Tully Hall? So like 3,000 people?
Not only
or
was it Alice Tully Hall, but like last year, and I was in Alice Tully Hall, there's an overrun. So basically, if you can't get into Alice Tully Hall, they bring – no, I'm sorry. It was not Alice Tully Hall. It's the – if you're looking at Lincoln Center and you're standing in the Metropolitan Opera House is right in front of you with the fountain. It's the and the New York State Theater is on the left. What's the theater on the right?
The one on the right. I don't know.
Well, it's that – I think it used to be called
– So if Alice Tully –
It used to be called Philharmonic Hall.
If Alice Tully seats 3,000
– Geffen Hall. I think it's Geffen Hall.
So what's it seat?
And then the overrun is they watch it on a monitor at Alice Tully Hall, the people that couldn't get into Geffen Hall. And they had a little piece in Geffen Hall. One of their ESPN guys was like – did something for 5 minutes. But Jimmy Kimmel was totally ragging on that too. You losers who are over at Alice Tully Hall – enjoy watching this on a screen. That must be real.
So did that make you feel bad because you were sitting in Alice Tully Hall?
No, I was not in Alice Tully Hall. I was in the Geffen Hall. But it was Kimmel was great, and John Mayer was a real surprise. He goes, yeah, we usually get horrible music acts for these.
So tell me about the after party. Did Kimmel go, oh, my God, Neil Rosen?
I did not go to the ABC after party. Oh. I had to work. But I did go to I did go, as I said, to the NBC.
That fucking paper route really screws you up every day.
But it was interesting, and ABC's full schedule does not look – there was nothing on there where I go, well, this looks really exciting, you know. But again, they just come out and they tell
you – Who's the biggest star they got that's never been on television before? Every year there's somebody at every upfront where they go.
Apparently, following America's Funniest Home Videos on Sunday night, they have Tiffany Haddish is going to be hosting the old Art Linkletter show for the five people
Kids
that are listening
say the
to this podcast
things,
that
yeah.
remember this or remember who Art Linkletter was called Kids Say the Darndest Things. So on her clip, she goes, "I got to clean up my act, and I can't be. But I'm going to be really nice to these fucking kids." Oh, excuse me.
See, that's going to be terrible. She's not going to be.
And they believe
they, like,
that
think
fucking,
it's a female.
You know, and she says you know. So she's going to be in, and the.
She's by the way a guest of David Letterman on his new Netflix series this year.
Oh, so whatever the, whoever the head of programming was goes, we wanted to get the. Who are we looking for? Who did we want to nail down to a contract this year? It was Tiffany Haddish. You know what I mean? So Tiffany Haddish.
And what's the Obama?
Following in the footsteps of Bob Saget, who hosted America's Funniest Home Videos, and now she's going to host.
What's your Obama tidbit when in his what TV shows?
No, he just signed a deal with I think Netflix to produce television shows. I'm sure there'll be of either I don't know if it'll be political content or. climate change or whatever, but he's going to be producing developing and producing some shows for Netflix. So
I want to thank everyone listening who said bless you.
Disney owns ABC and they own National Geographic and now they own Hulu and they own ESPN.
This digression with Neil Rosen is brought to you by LaCroix.
Well, there were all these presentations by the different networks that Disney owns prior to getting to ABC. It was really the Disney upfront more than the ABC upfront. And they also now own 20th Century Fox. So they didn't even get into that. But they just mentioned it briefly. So between that and Warner Brothers, these two companies pretty much, I guess NBC Universal Comcast owns, you know, it's like...
Well, every year you are our mole, and you sneak in, and that is incredible. Hey, they're sneaking. Speaking of sneaking, they're starting this weekend to sneak in a couple of cities. Booksmart, the movie that I'm telling you is going to be
the big,
big, big...
We're going to talk about that not only next week on our podcast.
I think it's going to be one of the biggest movies of the summer.
Well, I'm going to... hold my comments off on that. We got anything else?
You know what I love to do is I love to hype a movie to you so that you hate it. That's my single favorite thing to do.
Imagine if you hype a movie to me and I love it. That would really speak highly about that movie, wouldn't it? I mean, like that would really be above.
So that opens next week, Booksmart. What else?
Aladdin.
Oh, yes, which we're all seeing Monday night.
That is correct.
And which he's blue half of the movie, and he's regular Will Smith the rest of the movie.
Why is that?
I have no idea. It's very confusing. Well, I just know that when they showed the first footage of him and snuck it, and he was blue, everybody said, oh, he's working in blue face. And it's like, is that going to be okay? And then
you're going to offend all the blue people.
Yeah.
You can all the Smurfs. The population of Smurfs.
Will Smith can tell us until he's blue in the face that it's not a problem.
It is not a good sign that they're only screening this for critics on a few days before
Monday. That's not too bad. But yeah, they've waited a while, haven't they?
Well, Rocket Man, which
not just for critics, though. I mean, I have a feeling we're going to see it with a big, real audience.
Well, Rocket Man, which we're also going to see coming up, debuted at Cannes last night, and the crowd apparently went nuts for it.
The problem with Cannes is they jump on their feet for almost anything. So,
is that true? Have you been there?
You know, but I've been told that that's the problem with Cannes, and it's like a fanboy audience.
They can boo, but they can also
overpraise stuff that isn't great. So we'll see. I mean, it's been mostly positive.
Well, I think it was Hollywood Reporter. There was some site last night that said early reviews of Rocket Man. Maybe it was Rotten Tomatoes. I think Rotten Tomatoes had just little blurbs. And most of them, like you said, were positive. But then there were a couple of them when you start really reading them, they were just one-liners that said,
speaking of reading.
A by-the-numbers predictable biopic.
But that's what I said about Bohemian Rhapsody, and it still made $1 billion. So don't listen to me on biopics. Speaking of read, before we go, I always tell you there's something you're going to want to read. And in this week, it's Deadline Hollywood has a great interview.
Jeffrey Wells.
Really, really, really long. No, that's Hollywood Elsewhere.
Roger Friedman.
No, that's Showbiz 411. This is a magazine, Deadline Hollywood. But it's also online.
Bill Brigoli. Do you remember magazines?
Are we finishing the podcast?
Go on. What are we doing?
An interview with Francis Ford Coppola that will blow your mind.
In Deadline Hollywood.
I believe Michael Fleming.
Can I get it online?
You can. And I encourage you to do that. Until next week, I am Bill McCuddy.
What do we do every week?
We watch the bad movies so you don't
have to.
That's
true. And you could follow me at Neil Rose and Apples, and you could follow Bill McCuddy.
On Twitter, at Bill McCuddy. And thank you for... Bill, we had 20 new followers last week. Thank you.
Bill Brigoli on Facebook.
Talking to you, Mike, Neil.
Facebook, Bill Brigoli. Anyway, thank you for sitting around talking movies with us. You'll sit around talking movies with us again next week.